Presidential candidates are crisscrossing the state. State legislators are putting the final touches to key bills in Des Moines. And a recent congressional retirement has spurred speculation in the 2nd District. We get an update from Iowa reporters on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, April 19 edition of Iowa Press. Here is David Yepsen.
Iowa is known to have a never-ending political season, but this past week is just another indicator that reporters have plenty to cover in the months ahead. On the campaign trail, presidential candidates are already more than 300 events deep into the caucus cycle, and it's only April. State legislators have one eye on adjournment as they wrap up key bills. And if that wasn't enough, Iowa Congressman Dave Loebsack announced his retirement ahead of the 2020 elections. It's a busy slate for today's guests, a roundtable of Iowa reporters. Barbara Rodriguez covers the Iowa State House for the Des Moines Register. Aaron Murphy is Des Moines Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. Brianne Fonensteel is Chief Political Reporter for the Des Moines Register. And Kay Henderson is News Director for Radio Iowa. Well, you've all had a very busy week, campaigns, halls of the legislature. So let's cut to the chase. Aaron, Congressman Loebsack announces his retirement. Who's running?
Yeah, well, and that's going to be interesting. There's a lot of names on both sides. I expect we'll have a pretty competitive primary in both parties there. Somewhat unexpected. Congressman Loebsack insisted after 12 years, roughly, he had always figured he would retire, decided to do one more term when President Trump got elected, and felt that now is the time to step aside. Creates another competitive race. That instantly goes. The ink wasn't even dry on our story, and you had Sabato's crystal ball moving that race to a toss-up race. So you'll have a lot of people jumping in. On the Democratic side, Rita Hart, who was the lieutenant governor, running mate to Fred Hubble in this last election, former state senator from that area, is a possible candidate. State Senator Zach Walls from Iowa City, another one. Kevin Kenney, another state senator from the area and from the more rural parts of the district, has expressed interest. Then on the Republican side, a lot of names, a couple of Congressman Loebsack's former opponents, Marionette Miller-Meeks, Chris Peters, neither of them ruled out running. Bobby Kaufman, who's in the state house, might run. I expect to see a lot of names jumping into this race, and I expect to see a primary on both sides.
And the big thing about this is that Iowa will have four really high-profile, nationally high-profile congressional races in 2020.
Yeah, it's interesting. Trump carried the 2nd district.
Right. That's exactly right. Yep.
And I think it just adds a lot of money to 2020 in terms of all of the different campaigns and how much is going to be flowing into the state.
A few more TV ads is what we need. Brianne, let's go over to Steve King's district in western Iowa.
Well, speaking of money, we got a peek into this race this week with some fundraising reports. Steve King has never been known as a prolific fundraiser, but he's being pretty dramatically outraised right at this point by challenger Randy Feenstra, who's a state senator who's gotten a lot of attention for deciding to primary the sitting congressman. And so Senator Feenstra has raised about $260,000 compared to Congressman King's $61,000. And I think one of the big things that everyone in politics land is watching this week was former Governor Terry Brand's dad, now U.S. Ambassador to China, jumping into this race, donating $1,000 to Senator Feenstra, which is, you know, a signal to some Republicans in this state of where his allegiances lie and maybe where some establishment Republicans are going to be getting in this race.
You've got some other Republicans who are thinking about getting into this race. I mean, are we looking at the possibility of nobody gets 35%, so it goes to convention?
Right, and we've got two other people who have already declared, Woodbury County Supervisor Jeremy Taylor, Brett Richards, who's a former mayor, and there could be others to get into the race. And so I think the more you add into this race, you know, it could benefit Steve King because he is an incumbent. He does have that name recognition.
And that's why those fundraising numbers are important and interesting, because it's not just about Randy Feenstra versus Steve King. It's also Randy Feenstra versus those other candidates, and does the support in that district coalesce around one of them and make it a one-on-one Steve King versus X, or does that support get more spread out, which leads to more likely case of maybe going to convention?
Well, and the question there is that fundraising total for this first quarter enough to signal to others to kind of back off, or to actually, I'm also going to join the race kind of thing, you know, so.
And I think it's also important to note that J.D. Scholten also dramatically outraised Steve King and still fell short in the 2018 race. So fundraising isn't everything. Steve King still has a lot of support among his base and in that district, but it's an early indicator of where things are headed.
And well, mentioning J.D. Scholten, he has a decision to make. Does he run again in that district against King or perhaps some other candidate, or does he choose to run against Joni Ernst, who's up for re-election in 2020?
Well, speaking of Ernst, who else, is anybody else seriously thinking about being a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senator?
You always hear Rob Sands' name mentioned. He sort of downplays it on occasion, and then he'll send out a tweet that really ramps up the speculation that he may run. He is currently the state auditor.
You know, back to the Steve King race, there was talk early in the session of Iowa passing a sore loser law. Some Republicans are worried that, you know, they remember that Steve King got to Congress in a convention fight. He did not get a 35% in the primary. He went to convention. Conservatives gave him the nomination. Now, there's concern that if he loses that primary, that he might still run as an independent, which would really jumble the mix. Is there anything happening with the sore loser law idea? Sore loser law meaning that if you run in a primary and lose, you can't run as an independent.
Iowa's one of two states that doesn't have this law. It in bill form did not advance through the process thus far, and as there's no bill eligible for debate.
Yeah. Okay, how about Iowa's two new Democratic congresswomen? Mm-hmm. Both of them are looking at tough races.
Right, and the conventional wisdom is to knock off an incumbent. It's always easiest to do when they're first seeking re-election to a second term. So both of these congresswomen have been actively raising money in the first congressional district where Abby Finkenauer is serving. You have speculation that State Representative Henson, who used to be on television, widely seen by many of the viewers in that district, is considering a run. And you also have speculation that there are others out there who may be running in the third congressional district. There's a lot of speculation about a lot of people. Obviously, David Young may choose to run and have a rematch. Rod Blum in the first district may run to have a rematch. There are legislators in the third congressional district, that Southwest Iowa district, from the western edge. John Jacobson, who's a member of the Iowa House, Dan Dawson, who's a member of the Iowa Senate. You have other Republicans. So it really could be a crowded race. Remember, David Young also won that nomination at a convention. So if there's a wide variety of people running, that too could be settled at a convention.
And just to quickly hop back into the conversation about Senator Ernst and that potential re-election, there's also a lot of talk of Teresa Greenfield, mm-hmm. who was the former Democratic congressional, one of those Democrats who was seeking the nomination on the third congressional district. So there's a lot of chatter in the last couple of weeks about her.
I can't remember a time when Iowa has had all its congressional races be competitive. This is going to keep you guys busy. Covering it all. Let's switch
with the Senate race and a presidential race to boot, just in case we were feeling bored.
Exactly.
With some people putting Iowa in a lean Republican but doable category for the right kind of Democrat against mm-hmm. Trump. Turning to the legislature, Barbara, what are some of the big issues hanging things up here at the end of the session?
Well, I mean, there's a wide range of things, and I think, you know, sort of the most important point here is the budget. You know, they're trying to pass this like $7.6 billion budget, and you have Republicans who control both chambers announcing just a couple days ago that they've reached some sort of tentative agreement on budget targets. And they're going to start a little bit earlier in the upcoming week, and that all indicates a sign that they want to finish. But there's a lot of unfinished business, things on property taxes, judicial nominating, and so it's a matter of, you know, are they going to try to get those things done, which could prolong the conversation into a couple more weeks, or are they just going to, you know, set it aside for next session?
George Mills, one of the great Iowa political reporters, said one of the worst things that they ever did was air condition the Capitol because it keeps the legislature in town.
I would argue that they look out the window and see that it's sometimes now 60 degrees and they try to wrap it up, actually. So
The farmers want to go home.
See the eye cups playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kay, how's the governor doing? What's her scorecard look like?
Well, the last time we had one of these political roundtables, we discussed the failure of her felon voting rights proposal. It did not advance through the Republican-led Senate. She has said, okay, let's do it next year. It's not an imminent priority because it's a long process to propose a constitutional amendment, and the earliest it could be placed before voters is 2022. She also has another high-profile proposal in that she has advanced the idea of letting women go to the pharmacy counter to obtain traditional methods of birth control, the pill, and one other form. It easily advanced through the Republican-led Iowa Senate, but it's sort of ground to a halt in the House. It's unclear if it can emerge there. So two of her biggest priorities have been rebuffed by one of the Republican-led chambers.
Yeah, and I would just say that you could argue that she's had other successes on other things that she's prioritized with a Rural Iowa initiative. It's headed towards potential passage, but at the same time, you look at those pieces that were, at least the felon voting rights was really highlighted in her condition of the state address, and so, I mean, yeah.
And in fairness, these are a couple of issues that she sort of took a step out of her party on. These aren't traditional conservative issues. This wasn't an easy thing to stand up in the condition of the state, knowing that it was a lock to get these done. She kind of went her own on this, maybe trying to draw a contrast between her predecessor, Governor Branstad. Hasn't been able to wrangle enough votes. And interesting, you know, the Senate has been the sticking point on the felon voting rights, and the House has been the sticking point on the birth control issue.
Okay, she's been preoccupied with the flood.
Right.
How's she doing handling that?
This past week, I believe, she announced that she's formed a working group, and she'll be the chair of it to sort of manage how the state responds in concert with its federal partners and with local leaders who will participate in rebuilding public infrastructure. One of the key points is that they need to rebuild the roads that were damaged within 180 days of the event starting. And if they do that, then the federal government picks up the full tab. So there's a lot of pressure to get road work and bridge work started really quickly. She's also proposed spending $25 million over the next 2 years and asking legislators to put that in their budget plan. $10 million of that would be in the form of housing tax credits, the idea being that you would give these tax credits and perhaps people would rebuild, maybe not in the same location, but at least rebuild in the areas of Hamburg and Pacific Junction, which have really been decimated. And there's a real concern that people will not return to those communities.
Aaron?
I was going to say there's also some political pressure on her in the legislature, the fact that you have some Democrats, particularly in the Senate, who have tried to propose more money than that. And they did it early in April, and they've said that the state legislature needs to do a lot more than it currently is proposing. And so, you know, if something happens in the next couple of months, I could see some criticism potentially bouncing back to Reynolds on that.
Brianne, I noticed the vice president made a trip to Iowa, and then 2 weeks later you made another trip to Iowa. What's that all about?
Well, this is one of those issues that we're seeing action from politicians on kind of at every level. We've got our state level politicians, we've got our members of Congress heading out there. I think Cindy Axne has been really active. We're seeing Vice President Mike Pence, who, of course, is going to need to be running again. And then, of course, we're seeing all of these 2020 Democrats, too, making an issue of it. Kirsten Gillibrand was in town this week with Senators Grassley and Ernst. And so this is an issue that I think you can look at as very nonpartisan. You know, people are hurting. This is a natural disaster, and there needs to be action at various levels of government. And so I think we're seeing all of these people weigh in and try to make their case that they can.
Is Pence making two trips here to Iowa at the start of the 2024 caucus cycle for Republicans?
I think we're putting a little tick on our calendar that we can look back at.
What about the partisanship, though? I mean, both parties are pointing fingers at this flood aid not getting resolved.
I mean, I'm not sure. I guess the thing that I find kind of interesting, though, is there is a level of politics in there because being on the campaign trail, one of the issues that a lot of people say is a priority for them is climate change. And so you have flooding and you have some of these 2020 hopefuls connecting the flooding with climate change. And so there is some politics that gets kind of
Pence directly named U.S. senators who are presidential candidates who come into Iowa as for blocking a vote in the U.S. Senate on a disaster aid bill. And the Senate Democrats argue aid needs to be included for the Puerto Rican hurricane victims for hurricanes that occluded in 2017. The Trump administration is resisting that. What's been interesting is that when Senators Grassley and Ernst talk about this conundrum that they're facing in the Senate, they don't directly blame those people. They say things like, we need to find a compromise.
Aaron, we've got a lot of other issues up there on the Hill, and I want to quickly go through them. Changing the way we nominate judges in Iowa. What's the status of that legislation?
It's been a very hot button issue throughout the session, and it's stalled right now. The Senate passed it, and it has not been taken up in the House. As Barb alluded to, we're getting close here. We may only have 1 week left, and there has been no indication. That doesn't mean that it won't yet, but there's no immediate indication that that's going to get called up for a vote in the House, which means they don't have enough votes. If they did, they would be debating it. So there's still some wrangling to do, obviously, among House Republicans. Democrats are not going to support that. So House Republicans are a few votes short. May or may not happen yet this session.
Barbara, medical marijuana. Where is that issue?
Sure. So there's an effort this session to expand the existing medical marijuana program, but by changing how THC is in the medical marijuana products. And it passed, one version of the bill passed the House, and there's been some dispute over what the final bill should look like. And so it's kind of unclear whether it's going to advance, even though there had been, I mean, it had almost a unanimous support or just nearly unanimous support in the House. So it looked like it could advance, and the Senate is actually much more open to changing it, but it's gotten a little complicated.
A lot of these issues are sort of hung up here at the end, and one of the lessons I learned the hard way covering the legislature was you never kill anything too dead, because stuff has a way of coming right out of the box.
Well, it is Easter, resurrection time.
Well, and don't forget that a lot of policy language ends up in budget bills in the 11th hour. And that's what's actually had happened with some of the other previous medical marijuana bills. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it's not one of the last bills that advance again.
Speaking of budgets, the Attorney General, Democratic Attorney General Tom Miller, has raised Republican ire over some of his litigation. Now they're after his budget. What's going on with that?
So, yeah, the policy language that has ended up in a budget bill that would essentially restrict how the Attorney General can prosecute out-of-state lawsuits. And there was just a budget committee vote this week, and the Republicans on the committee voted for it, and so it shows that there's some support. Attorney General Tom Miller was at the Capitol this week, basically talking privately with lawmakers trying to squash this proposal because he argues that it would be a serious restriction on how he can do his job and consumer protection lawsuits that are outside of the state. It would require some sort of approval from either the General Assembly or the governor or a council.
And it's a direct response to when the Attorney General joins multiple state lawsuits against the Trump administration, which he's done a couple times over the family separation policy, over the citizen citizenship question on the census. Republicans don't like that they feel like the Attorney General Miller has politicized the office. This is their way of trying to rein that in.
Brian, property tax issues. What's happening with those?
So going into the session, Republican legislators were pretty clear in saying they wanted to do something about rising property tax rates. Last year, they had a massive bill cutting income taxes, and this year they wanted to focus on property taxes, which is a sore spot for a lot of Iowa taxpayers. And so right now there are two competing bills in the Iowa legislature, one in the House and one in the Senate, that both tackle the issue a little bit differently, but both in the end would put a cap on what local governments can raise through property taxes and how they can do that. And so it was really interesting looking at some of the dividing lines on this issue, because while it's being pushed by Republicans, there are a lot of Republicans in local governments who are saying this could really hinder the way that we can fund our local services. You had people standing up representing firefighters saying, we need to be able, this is already difficult to fund. And if you put another layer on this, it could be harder again. So this is another issue, as Barbara alluded to, that's coming up here at the end. It still has a long way to go in the process, but legislators have a way of making things move quickly when they want to.
Aaron, solar energy legislation.
Yeah, this is one that really has fired a lot of people up, pardon the pun there. It would allow utility companies to add a fee to solar users. To boil this down as quickly as possible, solar users pay a fee now for the energy they get from the energy companies, but some solar users produce enough that they actually sell that back to the companies. They don't pay a fee on that. That's where this new fee would come in. So the people who support the proposal say it's just a fairness thing. The people who are against it express concern that it would kind of dissuade people from investing in solar.
Well, the most interesting thing about this, because it's a four-page bill, and it's a little wonky when you read it, and why is it so controversial? It kind of pits pork producers and organized labor. Everyone has a different opinion about why this bill should either die or continue, and so that's sort of the drama behind it.
Yeah, it's one of those politics makes strange bedfellows types of bills. It's not a R&D issue.
Kay, what about another essential issue in Iowa, whether we should be required to put a license plate on the front of our cars?
Iowa is one of 31 states which does have that requirement. Bills over the years in the legislature have tried to get rid of it. If you buy a really high-end luxury car, the front bumper doesn't even have a spot for putting a license plate on. And so if you spend $100,000 on a car, you have to drill holes in the front bumper and put a plate on. There's a bill that's cleared the Senate that said, let's not do that if there's no place on the bumper for a license plate. The House this week has passed an alternative. Let's study the issue. But if you have a car that is 25 years or older, you don't have to put a plate on it.
You know, that's one of those issues that is so hot because everybody has an opinion.
Exactly.
What about another hot issue, Kay?
Well, it could cool you down.
Cocktails in a can.
Exactly. A bill is on its way to the governor. It's cleared the House this week, the Senate last month. It would let beer wholesalers sell to license holders of a beer permit these cocktails in a can that have 15% alcohol. This is a new market, obviously, and you have some pushback from small business owners who bought a liquor license, which is more expensive than a beer license, saying the bar down the street that isn't serving alcohol is going to get an edge over me.
You know, this is really an example of how citizen activism can make a difference. Lawyers, local officials, bar owners have all been weighing in on these issues, and they've had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, the election law changes. After in House District 55, we had a fiasco over counting absentee ballots. Lawmakers are struggling with what to do about that. What do you think?
Yeah, and for legislative geeks like us, it's been interesting to follow. The House designed a proposal to just fix that special election and confusion over the barcodes on the absentee ballots. They did a bill 95-96 to nothing, unanimous support. Went over to the Senate, where Senator Robbie Smith had some bigger ideas about election laws, and he tacked it on. So all of a sudden, now it's this big, complicated bill. It's been changed and tweaked and reduced in scope, and now kind of the two big things that we're still looking at and trying to figure out are we're back to that barcode. Should a barcode be required on absentee ballots so they can tell whether it was mailed on time or not? Or should we just require they be in by election day? That's still up in the air. And whether to close the polls an hour early on election day at 8 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. That's another one still.
Okay. Sports betting. What's the status of that legislation?
It cleared with no fanfare the Iowa Senate this past week in 13 minutes, and only one senator spoke about it, which is just almost unimaginable about a gambling debate in the Iowa legislature. And it's pending in the House. We're told sometimes they have the votes. Sometimes we're told they don't have the votes. That's something they'll have to address this week and get it off their agenda.
It's just interesting that it's one of the few bills that you could really say there's just serious bipartisan support,
right?
Because there are Republicans who don't believe in having some sort of sports gambling system.
And there are Democrats as well.
Right, and so you saw the Republican lawmakers kind of talking to different Democrats in sort of the last couple of weeks trying to get the votes needed to make this happen.
We're out of time. It's an official session of the legislature, though, if you have a gambling debate at the end, usually after the sun goes down. We're out of time. Good luck to all of you out on the trail. We'll be back with next week with another edition of Iowa Press at our regular times, 7:30 Friday night and noon on Sunday. For all of us here at Iowa Public Television, I'm David Yepsen, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.